All right, let me just confirm. Jed, is that your voice I hear? Jed, let me just confirm. Is that your voice that I hear?
It is. Yep. How are you?
Very good. Because I thought for a moment it was Frank Sinatra. I made a mistake.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
To each of you and all of you, we are delighted you're here for our Media Biz Power Hour educational program going into our 10th year working together. Thank you so much for being an ad sales leader. And for joining us here today, we're going to be talking about smart surveys equals smart selling. And we have lots of ground to cover with you. As we get settled in, you're always going to hear our words of encouragement. Find a quiet spot. Close your office door. Really focus on what we're going to be talking about here. Remember, it's not an accident. We don't put something on the screen. The very best in adult learning and education means the more notes you take, the more that you learn, and that's the coach approach that we always take in all of our educational programs. Plus, we'll be fielding your questions throughout the course of our time here together. Simply hit reply to the confirmation that brought you or send a quick email to ernest@powerhour.com. With me is Jed, the CEO and founder of MediaBids.com. And Jed, we always appreciate the support from you and your team and all the work that we do behind the scenes in order to put on these educational programs, and always look forward to hearing what's new, what's cooking around MediaBids.com. So how about some opening words as we get rolling here?
Great. Well, thanks again. Really, first of all, I want to thank Ernest for taking on the topic. Ernest always does a great job. I encourage all of you to listen to his he always offers great advice, and he also has several ways he offers great advice. He does teleseminars that are more focused on specific selling strategies that I'm sure he'll talk more about, that you can you should really take an opportunity to check out. So my name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of MediaBids. We have been in existence for 15 years. We are in the business of driving revenue for print publications. We also work with the online components of print of publications, but we really focus on the print product. We have several different methods of driving revenue to publications, but it all boils down to us delivering advertisers who would otherwise never buy an ad in your publication to your pages, and the revenue that accompanies that. So we work currently with about 10,000 publications, with about 25,000 advertisers. We have over the past year driven tens of millions of dollars to print publications, and we would love for your publication to use MediaBids. There's no cost to use MediaBids. We only make money when publications make money. So if you're not currently using us, please give us a call, send us an email. We'd love to explain to you more how we can help. If you are currently using us, thank you, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. But again, thanks for all of you for joining us, and thanks, Ernest, for taking on another interesting topic.
Thank you so much, Jed. Really appreciate it. And as all of you hear, the words from Jed, MediaBids.com is the source for helping you drive new revenue, added revenue. They understand our space and sector. Let him and his team tell you about the value of print through the eyes of leading ad agencies who know exactly what they're buying and why print is so unbelievably valuable and the kinds of leads that it drives. Make no mistake, we, of course, talk today, and we'll talk about the digital side, e-newsletters, the website side, and all of that does tie in. I mean, Jed and I do not have our head in the sand, but when media buyers come and say, look, for this kind of lead, I'll pay you $20 or $30, and this kind of lead, I'll pay you $2 or $3, we're still listening to the sound of the drum, and the ad buyers understand the value and the quality of the leads that are coming from those that Jed and his team are working with. My name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. You can find us at powerhour.com. I've been in the advertising sales industry since 1986. We've launched three of our own publications. I was a leader in a billion-dollar media group, and we launched Power Hour in 1995. So this is our 20th year. We've coached and guided more than 2,000 advertising sales companies and their teams in 11 time zones around the world. So we really have a deep, deep passion for helping you win. We like to say the hotter the kitchen, the more big opportunities, or the bigger your challenges, the hotter the kitchen, the more that we want to be there to help you win every step of the way. As Jed mentioned, we also have a live weekly advertising sales Academy. We focus on 19 media kit presentation areas, 26 business development strategies, 21 negotiating skills, and 32 sales skills to master. We meet every Tuesday. We have an audio message that our members get every Monday. It's generally 10 to 12 minutes. You listen to that, and then you come and field questions on a conference call like this. The difference is you're live and I'm live, and we field your questions every step of the way. Last but not least, across the LinkedIn platform, 2 million groups. Our groups are in the top 200 of 2 million groups. We have 130,000 daily readers, leaders, and members. We love the LinkedIn platform. We hope you do too. We do expert LinkedIn training, and we will help you win every step of the way. So, Jed, we're going to today be talking about smart surveys equals smart selling. Now, I'm not certain if that's an exclamation or a question mark after the title today, because when we're doing surveys, we are selling smart exclamation. But, of course, we must be doing surveys so that we can sell smart question mark. All right. And Jed, over all the topics we've done, we've never done one just dedicated on the power of surveys. We're going to talk today about reader surveys. We're going to talk about advertiser surveys and how it all ties in with ad agencies and how it helps us win. But partially the reason we're doing this is if we step back and look at some of the prior areas that we have worked on, right? We have worked on know the ad buyer, right? Who am I selling to? And we've done specific educational programs about the power of LinkedIn, the importance of LinkedIn, finding our best advertisers, finding our best prospects, noting the groups that they belong to, and all the other vital information that comes with a LinkedIn profile. We've taken it a step further. We've talked about the McKay 66, the 66 things that we want to know about our advertisers and prospective advertisers and how that relates to ad sales. And then we've talked about knowing our advertisers and prospective advertisers on the professional side and the personal side. So we've done lots and lots of educational work on that side of the house. In short, know who's signing your agreements. We've also worked on the other side, more recently especially, about knowing the ad buyers and the status of what's being bought. And, for example, we've had dedicated educational programs just on the importance of ad drop reports, keeping track of competitors, what's coming, what's going in print, what's coming and going on e-newsletters and also on the website. So we've also done those. And then, Jed, more recently, we've also have focused on the social media side. Remember a couple months back, we focused on the question called, you know, why do I need to buy an ad? I'm doing all my social media myself. Remember that? We just did that a few months ago.
I do. Yep, right.
Right?
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. And so we dug deep on that side. We talked about knowing if advertisers are doing SEO and if it's being done correct and if they're getting the juice, right? You walk into an ad sales meeting and they tell you, oh, I've got my SEO in place, I'm golden. Well, how could they be golden? You've already done your research and you know they're not golden, right? Or they tell you, oh, I'm on Facebook, or oh, I'm on LinkedIn, or oh, I've got my Twitter, oh, yes, we've got our blog, I've got it all dialed in. And you sit there going, are you kidding? I'm looking at accounts that haven't been, you know, updated in 3 years. You know, who's blowing smoke at whom? And we've done that kind of work behind the scenes. So you see, we've been doing a lot of foundational work, but the other piece and the other weave in between here is the surveying and talking to our advertisers and talking to our readers and our readership. And then we have lots of questions that come in, and we'll be picking and choosing from those as we kind of work our way through. So let's talk about point number one. Why are surveys so vital to your smart selling approach? And why are surveys valued so highly by ad agencies and key print and digital buyers. So let's go down the path and let's sort of think about what surveys do. Number one, it sets us apart. Okay? It sets us apart. And in all of our Tuesday Sales Academy work, we are constantly and consistently talking about the words, how do I set myself apart from all the other media buys? Okay, what makes me different? What makes me a must-buy? What is my USP? And if we answer that well, then we become not only the must-buy, but in terms of all the other media choices, others might be canceled, or other ad flights or programs might be reduced, or media buys may be scaled back, but I stand as a mainstream, as a source. Okay? And that's what we're looking for, and that's a consistent and ongoing pursuit in the world of ad sales and media success. So we're always looking for what sets us apart, and the act of surveys and doing surveying is one component of that. Number two, it also means that we're not your, quote, traditional regular salesperson. Hi, Jed, it's Ernest again. You want to buy an ad? My deadline's Tuesday.
Right. Yeah,
man,
tough to sell that way.
Flat.
Right. No, it's tough to sell that way. It really is.
Right. My deadline's Tuesday. I'm coming by. The old days, it was my deadline's Tuesday. I'll be in on Monday. I need a check and an agreement for the next day. And it was literally early days was cash and carry. There wasn't even, you know, there were many small to medium sized publishers publishing would literally have a Tuesday deadline, a Thursday print run. The printer was paid on Friday, so all the checks came in with the ads. What a simple model. There were no collections. If you didn't pay, you didn't run, and the printers got paid at the end of the week. Simple, simple model. There was something elegant, you know, in that approach. You remember those days, yes?
Right, yeah, of course. I mean, it was, you know, I think, you know, it was a different world, obviously, for publications, but, you know, maybe more importantly, it really was for advertisers as well. I mean, advertisers didn't have nearly the kinds of choices that they do today, and they had to play by the rules that were presented to them. I mean, the Yellow Pages used to do it the same way, right? You know, you want to be in? Okay, we're going to need, the advertising bill paid for this year, you know, before we, you know, before we leave town, right? You know, in another day or two. So,
I must tell you on that note, about a week ago, I got a note from our hosting company, and there was some confusion on an invoice that went back and forth. We had added a spam filter in, and they sent a note saying, hey, if we don't get a check in 10 days, your account's going to be suspended. And I looked at my team and I said, that was a $19 invoice that they're grinding us over. They're going to suspend our account in 10 days without even a phone call. I said, and we've been a client of theirs for almost 20 years. I said, find me the president of that company. I said, that note is completely unacceptable. Over $19, you would suspend our hosting, suspend our website, and all the other things that we do. So it's just a little reminder. Let's all always remember the element of customer service or lack thereof and what that conveys to our advertisers and ad agencies that we work with. Let's continue. The other part about surveys and why it tucks into a smart selling approach and working with agencies is there are a zillion, not a million, but a zillion ways to spend money nowadays. Wasn't always the case. You hear Jed and I oftentimes say, remember when, right? You had to put your ad in the Yellow Pages, you had a newspaper, you put out some flyers, and it was good old-fashioned word of mouth. Man, life, there weren't a lot of choices, but life was awfully simple, okay? That world is long gone, but we always pause for just a moment to remember that because it's not that way, there are so many choices on the other side that the act of surveying our readers and surveying our advertisers not only sets us apart, but it adds more clarity. It gives us a tighter message in our media kits. It gives us that wow factor when we go to make a presentation. And we'll talk a little bit in a little bit here today about white papers, speaking, trade shows, webcasts, all the other things. There's all kinds of other residual things that come from when you're doing surveys. It's more than just the survey. It's what do you spin from it and what do you spool around it. It also shows that you care about the sector. It shows that you're not just selling an ad, but that you intimately understand, and you may have, think about this, you may have more knowledge than anybody in the sector. And here's the reason why. I'll sometimes hear an ad salesperson or an ad sales team say, you know, look, we're doing the best we can to sell into this RV sector, but no one here has ever worked at an RV dealer. No one's ever owned an RV, and no one's ever owned an RV dealership, Ernest. So how can we be better or more knowledgeable, right, than those advertisers that we're selling? And I pause and say, hang on. Look at the LinkedIn profile, the people that you're selling to. Tell me how many dealers they've actually worked at. Tell me how many years of tenure. Think about how many RV dealers that you're going to speak to this week alone and this month alone. You're like a hummingbird, kind of going from flower to flower to flower. You hear the best marketing strategies. You hear the best ideas. You hear the best sales training. You observe things that don't work. You know, yes, we went out and did this direct mailer, and we bought it from the Acme Group. Man, was that a mistake. Those are a bunch of idiots over there. You put that in your file. Hey, I got to tell you, we put that billboard sign out there, and we had 4 visitors. What did you just learn? Boy, that billboard works. You know, you get more information in dog years every 30 days than most will get in a year, 3 years, or 5 years, because each of those who you sell to are sitting in these little silos. So you never forget that when you go out and do a survey that you command the high ground. Okay, that you have information, that you have ad agencies and media buyers eating out of your hand. But we'll talk about that in just a minute, because what is the key to have them eating out of your hand? And that's what this is about. And then lastly, DSQ, which stands for, and for those of you that are part of our Tuesday Academy, we talk about this all the time. DSQ stands for disrupt the status quo. You got to do it. If you're not in a presentation talking about your surveys, disrupting the status quo and having an ad buyer saying, hang on, how do you know that? Hang on, where did you get that from? Hang on, I've never heard that. If you don't have that happening in your sales presentations, if you're not disrupting the status quo, then you're not driving ad sales. Sure, you're selling ads, but you're not driving it. You're not a must-buy. You're not a thought leader. Okay, a little story I've shared over the years, a young lady who worked for me by the name of Teresa, still in sales in the sector, that I worked with her more than 25 years ago. And she said, I got a little inkling. I'm going to go out into the marketplace, and I'm going to do a little survey, and here's what I'm going to gather, and I'm going to put on a spreadsheet. And once I get it compiled, I'll be able to run some averages and produce a summary. And the deal will be those who supply the information for the survey get the information back. And she said, then I'll cloak it. I'll pull the company names off so that it'll be this sort of quasi, it was just a little quasi white paper. Oh my gosh. She began to produce it monthly. Advertisers were eating out of her hand. Prospective advertisers were saying, how do I get my hands on it? Of which she said, well, when you advertise, you get it, and if you don't, you don't. Key buyers and decision makers in their corporate offices were calling her. Key buying decisions were made company-wide based on the little bitty survey that Teresa went out and did. It was eye-popping. Teresa sold pages like hotcakes, and everybody knew her, and everybody knew about the research that she generated. It was so interesting, the work, that at one point in her professional career, a couple of years later, she was recruited by those who she used to sell advertising to, folded into a VP position, and they doubled her compensation because she was so valuable. She was that hummingbird. She was out talking to all the advertisers, kind of like Switzerland, compiling into this incredible spreadsheet. She became the hub of all this information. And when they floated her and brought her in on the corporate side, when a company brought her in, they wanted her fresh eyes to guide their team and doubled her comp as a result. So, you know, Jed, the smallest pebble can go on to become such a large mountain. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's, once you really focus in on a specific group, I mean, that knowledge just becomes so valuable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You bet. So let's field some of the questions that came in as prep for today. We have a question that came in from Ontario that says, what is the most effective way to survey readers? And the question is by print. Let me just make a note here. By print, to an online survey, or by printed questions in the magazine. Okay, so the surveys, a couple of pieces. We want to go by land, sea, and air when we're surveying readers, because I can see that that's kind of the direction that you're going in, and we're going to field that in the second part of what we're covering here today. But the answer is use everything. Use your printed magazine to survey your readers. Use your LinkedIn group. Use your Facebook. Use your Twitter. Use your blog. Use your newsletter. Right? Use all your mediums, because they're all going to pull of readers from a different perspective. Now, some of you might say, would you gather that information and study your print versus your digital separately? I would. I would actually say, gee, I wonder what the difference is between my digital side. Maybe they're younger or older. Maybe they make more money or less money. And I would break those out. I don't know if I would present it separate, quite frankly, but I would start by studying it to see if I could learn anything about my readers who engage with me on the print side versus those who come in on the digital side. Any comment, Jed, related to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I think it really depends on your readers and what you think is going to work, you know, and whether or not, you know, what you think will be the most effective method. We use some different surveys, survey companies that here at MediaBids, and we use them pretty often. They're nice because they're easy. You can upload email addresses, compile your survey questions, and then the results are formulated for you and compiled in a pretty nice, easy to read format. That tends to work for our users because although we buy and sell print ads, we're using online methods to do that. So theoretically, people are, you know, a little more focused on that maybe in our world than they might be in some others. But they're, you know, I think the nice thing about surveys is it probably doesn't have to be one or the other, right? It can probably be whatever you think will work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a companion question to that as well from our listener about how many responses are required for the survey to be considered a reliable source of data, and how do you get the number of responses up? So there's a sort of a companion piece. And so I actually dug in and did some poking around the web about what makes for a reliable survey. And I ended up backing into SurveyMonkey, right, Jed, that,
yep,
I know we're all familiar with. And
sure,
they said that, hey, there's four criteria. Number one, the size of the group that you want to survey, the percent response that you're looking for, your confidence level, and the margin of error. I thought that was very interesting. And I remember also hearing about, you know, 76 people make, like, you know, when they do some of these national polls or these broad population polls, 76 people make a survey. And I've heard that number rattled around for a long time. And I went back and poked around on that. And that was one of those urban myths. You know, it really is tied to, you know, are you surveying 100 people? Or are you surveying 100,000 or a million people? 76, you know, there's not some magic number. So we do want to focus on, you know, and then there was some conversation, Jed, about 3-5% or 5-7%, you know, kinds of responses. And my response is going to be, look, do the surveys, promote it by land, sea, and air, gather all the information, and take a picture. That's a snapshot. That's what we know at this point in time. Come back in 6 months, do it again, and see what's changed. Okay, you're going out to the same group, the same audience, asking similar questions, and you're going to keep taking that snapshot. And the more, sort of like a fine bottle of wine, the more that you do the surveys, the more verified information you have internally that you're able to press the data against related to that. So thank you for that question. Another one from this is similar, another participant in Washington. How do I get your customer base to participate in a survey? Same response, similar, use all the media sources. Let me see, there was another one that says, which social media matters the most when surveying? Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest. Okay, so again, our response to that is going to be, use everything that you have on the print side to promote your surveys. Use everything you have on the digital side and let them all weave together. For example, you know, if I see your print magazine, and there's a form there. Do I mail it in? Can I fax it? Can I scan it by email? Can I just come into your form on your site? Give me multiple options depending on, for example, age group. An older audience might say, yeah, you know, I'm willing to put a stamp on it. One of the things, though, that is sitting out there is how to increase the response. How do we increase the response? Give more away. Make it a bigger prize. For example, in my earliest days, Jed, 20 years ago, I worked with a group that worked in the hot rod space, and we did surveys twice a year, and they literally gave away GM motors, six-cylinder motors. The motors were like $3,000. You know, and that's what encouraged this unbelievable response to their surveys twice a year. And therefore, they had amazing response. So the key is what? Give more to, you know, to get more. You know what I'm saying?
Right, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
So, So again, great questions, and we'll continue to work and weave those in during the course of our educational program here today. And just simply send an email to Ernest@powerhour.com or pop a reply to the confirmation that brought you here. Let's go to point number two. Let's get a little more granular. Let's talk about serving our readership, the questions to ask, and then also tying in external research that we can combine with our internal readership, which means we can combine our internal surveys and we can also pull from external and get sort of a composite look, okay? So number one, where do we start? We start by asking our advertisers and our ad agencies, you know, what is it you want to know about our readership? What do you want to know about those in the sector? I'm going to be today really focused on using the RV sector. It's one that we're familiar with, we're comfortable, and it's kind of one of those easy examples to work with. But, you know, before we go out and imagine it, ask your RV dealers. Ask your RV prospects. Let them know that you're conducting a survey and show them, for example, what you've done in the past, and then ask them what else that they want to know. Because in the end, they're going to be the most vested because either A, you included them, or B, you tweaked one or two of the questions that they really want to know. That was one of their hotspots. Okay? So start with that. Number two, look at any surveys that have been done by competitors. All right, now how do we learn that? Well, we see it in their print magazine. Or I'm going to guess, and Jed and I are going to guess, you're getting the e-newsletters of your competitors. You're going to see when they go out and do surveys. You might see it in their media kit. You might see it in their website. You might see it in a brochure at a trade show one of your competitors is utilizing. So look to see what your competitors are doing. Look also at your association surveys, surveys that are done within the association. So again, using this RV example, I'd be taking a look to see if there's been any white papers, any in-depth surveys of the members, anything I can get my hands on over the last 1 year, 3 year, 5 year. For example, in one of the sectors where we have a lot of client work that we do, there's a group out of Georgia that does an annual, very comprehensive survey of all of the members in the association, about 700 members in this particular sector. And there's information in there that we extract and pull out and combine that to wrap into white papers that we generate for the sector. Okay? So associations have sort of this nice sort of built-in. Not all. They don't all do it. And not all members are willing to pay for the survey work by associations. But associations generally have a good opportunity to rally their members and say, hey, we're going to survey you informally, or we're going to reach out to a group professionally to get a professionally done survey on the outside. So that's always a path. Let's talk about some of the examples. And, Jed, as you're kind of listening to me walk through some of these examples, see if I've either missed any or if it sparks thinking for you, and then I know we've got a bunch of questions related to this. But some of the questions, you know, let's use again RV. Wouldn't you like to know the typical age, right, of those who are buying RVs? Now, it's safe to assume that that might skew to a 50-plus audience, right? But I have my niece and her husband, he's in the military, and they're in their early 30s, and they have a big, beautiful RV. Why? Because they like to travel. It's inexpensive. They got three young kids, and that's their version of a great vacation. So let's not automatically go to, oh, RVs are a 50 or 60-plus. Okay? Gender, male, female. Who leads that decision? Okay? That would certainly be valuable to know. How about this one? You know, Jed, when I think about number of dealers visited. Like, if I was a dealer, would I like to know you go to two and you choose between two? Or would I like to know you go to 22 and it's a shopping market? It's like buying salad dressing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the right. I mean, right. Sorry, keep going with your example. I'll bring up one point mm-hmm. there and you're done. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right. I'll continue going through. Because these just like, and I'm not saying to you or to the group, I'm the world's expert on buying RVs, but what I can tell you is it's interesting to me. You know, how many dealers do you go out and see? You know, what kind of how many RVs are you going to drive in the process? How many are you going to drive? How many weeks or months before you buy are you going to plan? So in other words, you know, Jed, is it possible that I could go wander on and off, you know, RV dealer lots for the next 2 years, right, before I really make a purchase? Might I only drive two, or might I drive 102? I don't know, but these are the things that would be curious if I were doing a survey. How about this one? What is the distance you're willing to drive to a dealer? Now, I have sometimes heard, we have a client in Canada that's very focused on this particular category, and they have wonderful website and newsletters and publications, and they have sometimes referenced that, you know, those in Canada are willing to drive to the States, depending on the exchange rate and miles and geography and time, in some cases quite a distance, you know, to purchase an RV. So that for me would be another one of those factors, okay? If the price, and then the other companion question is, if the RV was the same, in other words, same price for the same RV, how does the buyer determine which dealer is best? Like, what is their criteria? You know, so when you pose that kind of question, you know, if you were looking to buy an RV, you have found exactly the same model, exactly the same price, and it was at four RV dealers, which dealer would you choose and why? Kind of interesting, right? You know, how often, and how about this piece, how often do you buy a new one? In other words, what is the life cycle? You know how, Jed, we talk about like appliances are 7 to 10 years in a home, or a roof is 20 to 25 years. You know, what is the life cycle? You know, do you buy an RV and you own it forever? Do you buy an RV new versus used and expect to drive it for 3 years or 5 years or 7 years? You know, all of these things sort of tick along in just that category of I'm curious about, or I would like to know, right? Jed,
right.
What thoughts does that spur for you? Tell me.
When you're saying all this, you know, I think what occurs to me and the way that we sort of think about it here when we do surveys is basically mm-hmm. surveys become a really valuable tool for overcoming objections. So if you think mm-hmm. about the objections that the average that you meet on a daily basis, you know, it could be, well, you know, the readers of your publication, you know, are they're too, you know, we sell to women and your readers are men, or you know, or your readers are, you know, we're looking for a more affluent clientele, or we're looking for a less affluent clientele, or we're looking for, you know, we're looking for people who, you know, who own a second home, or we're looking, you know, whatever it might be, whatever those objections are, which are very difficult to overcome without data, you know, surveys are the tool to gather that data, right? They're the means to sort of be able to say to advertisers who have been telling you, for example, for years, you know, we're not going to advertise with you. Why? Because we advertise on TV. Well, why do you advertise on TV? We advertise on TV because, you know, we're able to reach this specific type of person, or this specific, a person who sort of fits this profile. Well, those are the kinds of, you know, what a survey does is it gives you the ability to sort of fight back a little bit, to go back to that guy and say, hey, look, you know, we did a survey and we asked the question that, you know, are you you know, are, you know, when was the last time you bought a refrigerator? You know, it could be anything. You know, are you shopping for a mattress? You know, and we found that, you know, 25% of our readers, you know, bought a new mattress within the last 2 years. So based on that, on those numbers, we're able to extrapolate and say, you know, we account for whatever it might be, you know, $50,000 worth of mattress sales, you know, in the next quarter. That kind of information, I think, helps overcome objections and just offers some real compelling kind of data, data-driven comebacks to the objections that you're probably hearing every day.
Mm-hmm. And there are times when Jed and I are working back and forth, and I'm like, Jed, what are you reading my notes? Are you crazy? That was my next point. No. I need to celebrate brilliant. You had me. Okay, bravo. All right, so listen to what Jed just said. Survey the questions, just a capsule. Ask the questions and do surveys on your toughest objections that you can say. Our surveys show that you are right, and here's how we address it, or our surveys show that, in fact, you're incorrect, and here's how we validate it. Again, this goes back to so in some of my earliest days selling ads, Jed, you know that we would go out and sell ads to very large apartment developers and real estate building owners, right? And we'd have 400, 500, or 600 advertisers, and we'd have like 10 of them that wouldn't put their price in, right? And we would come back to them and say, look, here's the surveys that we've done with the readers. Here's the perception that you 10 that don't put your prices are perceived as higher, means that the reader has to do more work, and it shows statistically, based on our tracking, that you get the least results. So sure enough, those 10 came along and began to include their pricing so that it made it easy for the consumer to shop and compare every single apartment building in a given marketplace, okay? So those are the kinds of things. So that was great. Let's field a couple of questions. We have a question in from one of our listeners from New York. What are the key questions to ask in your survey in order to provide advertisers with compelling information? Well, you've heard us capture right here. You know, ask your advertisers. Look at what competitors are doing. Speak to ad agencies. Look at associations. Okay? And then the other part is, you know, brainstorm as a team. You know, whenever we're working together, whether it's here, it's in our academy on Tuesdays, whether we're coaching our ad sales clients, you know, there's always this serendipitous, well, what about, or, you know, I recently saw a survey that asked this question or that question. And, you know, and so, surveys evolve over time is what we're saying to you. So keep them fresh and continue to tweak them as you go forward. We have another question from a listener in Massachusetts. Should a small community local newspaper do surveys? The answer is yeah, positively. We don't care how big or how small. We feel like surveys should be done minimum twice a year of your readers. And being a small newspaper is even more valuable because you really get to ask questions. For example, I live in the ski resort in Park City, and it is a small town. And it's a small publication. It comes out, small newspaper, twice a week. It is like an absolute must read. And if you surveyed me, even when I travel, I go onto the website to stay in touch. And how about this? When I come back, I have every single newspaper that I read cover to cover because the online doesn't give me that visibility. Every single one. My most recent trip, I was gone for almost 10 weeks, so I had 20 newspapers. I read every single one. Why? Because I care about my community. And man, if you had that in a testimonial to walk and talk and put that in front of advertisers, that's worth its weight in gold. I think you could open a presentation and close it in the first 90 seconds by slotting my letter in front of an advertiser and making your sale, because that's the truth. That's the kind of loyalty that a small newspaper creates, okay? So another good question. And then let's address one more question. We have a question that came in from one of our participants in Texas. Do advertisers prefer third-party surveys? So a comment about third-party is if they're available, yes, that's fine. If they're available, you can weave them into your actual surveys. Like you heard me mention some of the examples earlier. I like taking, here's my internal readership, and here are the 10 things that we learned, and here's four more things that we pulled in from the external, and you footnote those, and all of a sudden you've got something really meaty and really beefy, and we like that a lot,
okay? So, and to bring it back around on the readership side, then you can weave all of this into a white paper. Okay, you can use it for speeches and speaking opportunities. You can take pieces out of this and put it into written articles that you can feed back. Let's again go back to RVs and go back and feed it into the newsletter or the magazine that goes out to RV dealers. You could speak at, you could present at trade shows or be on a panel. You could put on educational programs like we're doing here. So you see, these readership surveys are more than a static event that you go out and you do it and it sits on the shelf and it sits for 6 months. You can bring it to life and you can do so much more with it because you're utilizing it and you're bringing it to life, and advertisers are seeing that over and over, and the agencies are seeing it over and over, and that's one of the many, many ways that we disrupt the status quo, that we increase our USP, that we position you as Switzerland and as leaders in your space and sector. And you might say, hey, Ernest, hey, Jed, you know, gee, we're not doing this now. Well, that's why you're here. That's why you're a leader. That's why you're listening to what we're doing here. We are all working harder in the ad sales space. We wish that we could wave the magic wand and the magic carpet would fly out over the meadow. It's just not true. We're working harder than ever before for our ad sales. But if we're going to work hard, let's work smart. That's the point of today. Let's work smart and let's ensure that we're using strategies that set ourselves apart. Otherwise, what? We're just like the milk jugs in the grocery store, the purple cap, the red cap, the blue cap. It's all milk to me. Close my eyes. I'll grab one. Great. Milk's purchased. And if you're like that and you're a commodity, you're not going to dominate your space and sector. Jed, any additional comments about surveying readers before we go to the other side and talk about surveying advertisers?
We've talked a lot today, and I think it's all accurate and valuable, everything that we mentioned about surveying readers in terms of sort of their economic interaction with the publication. I think one of the things which when I get surveys from publications with my ad buyer hat on, which I find really interesting is how are questions that pertain to how the reader interacts with the publication itself. Like, for example, you know, are there parts of the publication that they're more likely to read than others? Are there specific pieces of information that they're getting from that publication that they really can't get anywhere else? And who those readers sort of, you know, a profile of those readers about themselves. So for example, you know, you may find that that there are four or five things that are in your publication every issue editorially, right, that readers really are drawn to. And there may be different parts of your publication that different types of readers are drawn to. You know, I mean, obvious sort of most clear example, right, is that, you know, stereotypically speaking, more men read the sports section in daily newspapers than the lifestyle section, just to pick a silly example. But you get the point, right? And for an advertiser, that kind of information can really be beneficial because you can it just gives you a better understanding of sort of why people are reading the paper or magazine, what they're getting out of it, and a smart advertiser should be able to kind of tailor what they're trying to get those readers to do based on why they're reading the publication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here's a real life example, right? Here I'm telling you about the sweet little paper in Park City. Here comes my favorite section. And you'd only get this if you surveyed me. What is your favorite section? Favorite section is called the Mountain Roundup. Generally, they take a page or two, and they tell, they have news articles. What's happening in Jackson Hole? What's happening in Vail? What's happening in Aspen? What's happening in Sun Valley? Do you know, I read that more closely. It sounds crazy, but I like to know what other trends are happening in other small ski resort towns, and it keeps me on the pulse. And for me, it's a must-read. It's such a must-read, 17 years later, that I would call the editor saying, what did you do to the section? What happened to that? I loved reading that. I so enjoy. So while I enjoy all kinds of other parts of the paper in this particular example, that's one of those that I absolutely love. All right? All right, so let's move to the other side, okay? The third and final point for today is the other side, serving our advertisers and our prospective advertisers. And how does this help us sell more ads and sell smartly? Once again, we need to ask our advertisers and our ad agencies what's relevant to them, much like we did on the readership side. Okay? We want to ask what you most want to know as an ad sales professional. We want to also think about the things that will help improve our media kit and our sales presentation. All right, so let's go back to that RV example, okay? Would you like to know the average monthly budget of an RV dealer? You know, are some spending $5,000, are some spending $25,000, or for the most part, is everybody between 8 and 10? You know, what is the range of the pie that you're actually competing for and looking at? You know, is it like the bell-shaped curve that almost everyone's in the middle? 10% spend none, 10% spend a ton, and everyone else is in the middle? Or does it move in tiers? The big spend the most, that's the top third. The middle third, you know, spends kind of a middle range. And the bottom third kind of, you know, scrimps along. What does that tell you from an ad selling sales perspective? Okay. How about the number of media sources they use and utilize? On average, is it 2 or is it 22? Wouldn't you like to know these kinds of things? And wouldn't each of the RV dealers like to know? Maybe they're only utilizing 3 sources and they learn that the average is 13. Okay, which opens up nice conversation for what? More ad sales. Okay, another biggie, and we've done this a lot of work in our Tuesday Ad Sales Academy, and we've talked about this yet along the way. You know, what do they get as their return? If they spend $100, right, what is the cost per call, meaning the total number of calls that come from a media source, right? Calls, not warm or hot, but that's general activity. Then the next piece is, how many of those are really warm and valid and enough that they convert into a site visit, or in this case, the drive? They come to the location. They move from a phone call. Yeah, I was just thinking about, you know, an RV in the future. Great. That's a call, but that's not warm. That's not really a lead. To the next person who says, no, I've actually been to 3 dealers, and I just want to confirm your hours. Great. Let's book a time, and I'll be there at 4 o'clock today. Boom. That's a lead for that $100. The site tour, or actually to come to the location, to actually drive, you know, an RV, that's what? The cost per site visit in this case. And every sector has their own calculation. And then lastly, the ultimate for that $100, how many of those calls converted to a drive and a drive converted to a sale, and we get cost per sale or cost per transaction.
Okay. Let me just add one thing to that.
Yeah,
if you're going to ask advertisers, and I think they're great questions to ask advertisers, how many calls they get, how many calls turn into a lead, how many leads turn into a sale, all that's critical information. Make sure if you're going to ask them those types of questions, though, you ask them how they know. You know, ask them, right? Ask them what tracking mechanism they're using to determine whether or not they're correctly attributing phone calls to any particular media source. Because one of the things I think you'll find is very often is that you know, Shirley or John, who answers the phone, is supposed to ask. And if Shirley or John, you know, doesn't hear the exact right thing, doesn't hear the name of your publication, you know, correctly, very often that gets attributed to, you know, something more general, like, you know, Yellow Pages or Internet, you know. So I think it's really important to ask how they know, like what tracking methods they are actually using.
And Jed, you're reading my notes.
No, I'm sorry.
Because our next point. No. Hey, I'm loving today. We're doing what we always do. You know, I start, you finish, you finish, I start. My next one, I'm looking down and go, oh, look at that. We're going to talk about tracking. The next note is, yeah, tracking. What do we want to know about tracking? How do you track each of your media sources? That's what Jed's talking about. How do you track each of the newsletter buys? How do you track each of your website purchases, clicks, ads? That's what this is about. How do you track and distinguish that which is coming directly from your site? I mean, these are the questions that you want to know, and you want to peel it back. because this is also where you get to do what? Come in and talk to advertisers at a very high level. This is, look, you only have 3 media sources. The average in the sector for other RV dealers is 13. I want to tell you straight up, every one of those 13 sources are tracked like this, this, and that. You have 3 sources with no tracking. I'm here to talk to you about advertising, but I'm not putting you in my publication, newsletter, or website without a tracking mechanism, because that's how we win. In fact, while we're talking about the tracking, here, let me pull out and show you my data for the last 36 months about what we know about ad sales success and the ad results that you should be generating. The number of calls, the number that convert to site drives, the number that convert into closing. Therefore, I can show you the return on investment. It's all here. We sort of take it cradle to grave. And, Jed, that's, you're spot on. That's what this is all about. We're asking the questions that we really want to know. That's what we're doing with advertisers and prospective advertisers. And then we want to parlay over to social media. And we want to understand what is it they're doing on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or Instagram or on a blog or on SEO. It goes on and on and on, because now we have advertisers. Remember a couple of months ago when we did this, you know, the old days, it was the standard objection was, I don't need to advertise. I'm so well known, it spreads by word of mouth. Boom. Okay? Then it became, hey, I've already got my ad in the yellow pages of newspapers. I'm golden. Phase 2. Phase 3, you're not in my budget. Okay? We have been living with you're not in my budget for a couple decades. More recently, what is it? We're doing all our own social media. Hey, gang, this is the same verse of that's where the selling begins. But if we don't have surveys and we can't talk about advertising in a new way, then we have to just lean back going, well, I guess that was a no. I'll have to keep on dialing. And I'm on the other side, and Jed's on the other side going, what do you mean keep dialing? You didn't get to the table to have an appetizer. You didn't even begin the selling process. We're on the other side saying, how do you get all the way through dessert, coffee, and on the other side, shaking hands with a big smile, says, yeah, you're happy and we're happy. Ask about social media in terms of the survey. And all of this, again, gets woven into your media kit, white papers, speaking opportunities, panels, trade shows that you're presenting at, webcasts, educational programs like we're doing here. Okay, all of this. Now you have something golden to take out to whom? Advertisers and prospective advertisers with information that they could never get themselves. Try, as an RV dealer, to call up 25 of your competitors and ask them any of these questions, okay, and you're going to hear click as quick as you get a hello if you were an RV dealer trying to get this. But when you're Switzerland, as an ad-selling media group going out across these dealers, and each of them, you say, look, if you'll give me 1/25th, I'll go out to 24 more, and I'll get all 25th. I'll get the whole story. I'll bring it back. I'll strip out anything that would be confidential, and you will see a report that has never been produced in our space and sector. And that's the promise. But, oh, by the way, if you don't contribute, I won't give it to you. Okay, you can excuse me. You can buy it. You can buy excuse me. The white paper starts at $5,000, or you can contribute, and I'll gift it for free. Wink, wink. Right, Jed?
Right, right. Okay. Ernest, do you feel like the advertiser survey should come before the reader survey? In many respects, sort of the answers that advertisers give sort of educate the questions you want to ask for readers?
Yeah. You know, it's the classic chicken and the egg. I want them both done, you know, quite honestly. The types of questions that we ask advertisers are different, as you can hear, than we typically ask dealers on the other side. And, you know, I'm also a believer that put a stake in the ground, go get it done. Show me something of something rather than something of nothing, right? Show me 100% of your first pass at a survey, and then we'll come back in 6 months and do it again. If you think about it, if we're doing 2 surveys of readers, right, twice a year, and then in between we're doing 2 surveys of advertisers, that means once a quarter we're in the middle of one survey or the other, so you get an opportunity to refine this as time goes forward. I do want to field a question, though. We've got a question that came in from a listener in Ohio, and this is a biggie, okay? What if the results of your survey suggest you should be doing something in a different direction than you want to go? I love that question. and that's one of those, the definition of insanity is what? Keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So here's the answer to that, twofold, okay? If a marketplace is saying go left, all right, they're trying to tell you that they'll buy more ads if you go left, right? But if you say, no, I have a plan to go right, and you can succeed, and you can win at that, then I'll still say, great, we're going to go to the right for the following reasons, but don't skip over, you know, to go left. And by the way, some of those can be something like, I wish you had more frequency, or I wish you covered more of an area, or I wish you covered a smaller area, or I wish you went up the ladder in the tier of the buyer, or I wish you moved back down, you know, older, skewed younger. You know, listen to what they're telling you. You know, make certain that you understand that you're not skipping over. The value of surveys is to listen to the drumbeat. It doesn't mean, by the way, that because you hear the drumbeat, you know, that you've got to go play the piano. Don't misunderstand. I love the vision of entrepreneurs. I love the passion and success of ad sales teams. And if we had advertisers, you know, sort of wagging the tail, you know, of the donkey, then, you know, honestly, many media publications wouldn't be here today. I think about Wine Connoisseur, right? And then I think about how he spooled into Cigar Aficionado. And when that thing first kicked out, man, there was all kinds of pushback about that. And then more recently, Marvin has kicked into Whiskey. Whiskey Advocate is his most recent. I mean, the guy just sits on these luxurious categories. And why? It's just the stuff he loves. He loves wine. He loves cigars. And he loves his single malt whiskey. And frankly, his stuff, you know, the stuff that he puts out, Jet, the glossiest, heaviest print publications, you need three hands to hold them, and you just want to savor every page. You don't even want to, you know, turn a page because it's so filled with great stories, great photography, and you could just feel him sharing his passion. You know, so that's someone that says, look, this is my passion, and I'm not going left. I go to the right, and I'm not writing about beer, and I'm not writing about rum, and I'm not writing about cigarettes. I like whiskey, cigars, and I like my wine, period. So anyhow, Jed, a response to this. What happens when the survey comes back and it's a different direction than we want to go? Your observations on that?
I mean, obviously, you're going to get some people who are just, you know, completely going in a different direction than what you want. I do think, though, there's probably lots of variations in there. You know, my guess would be that if Cigar Aficionado, right, did a survey and they got back that a lot of their readers, for example, were interested in cigars you feature are great, but they're all super expensive. How about a feature on, you know, cigars under $20 or something? That they probably would do it, right? I mean, that it may not be the direction they want to go, but they probably are would be open enough, and it sort of fits their paradigm enough, right, to do it. So I think there's varying degrees of these things. I think that. Obviously, you don't want to. You have to steer the ship, right? But I think that the ship should be able to move.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You bet. And so our response in general about surveys is that we're going out to do surveys to sell more ads. Let's not lose sight of that. And if 10 of 12 agencies are saying, you know, you need more editorial here, or you need more circ there, or, you know, you need less of this, or, you know, to remove that because, you know, we do have to listen to that, okay? So, you know, probably from my coaching perspective, I'm going to probably lean into about 70% of that conversation and go, you know what, they're saying that that's the piece, they're beating the drum. Are we sure we're going to, you know, bring out the piano? 70%. I'm going to say, let's focus. The other 30 says, all right, but let's go back to our mission statement. What is our goal? What is it we're focused on accomplishing? What is it we're trying to do? You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, Habitat for Humanity. Their calling is to be a hand up, not a hand out. And it is mandatory that the homeowner gives blank number of hours towards their home. And they could build more homes if they didn't require that. But that's not their piece. Their calling is we build quality homes. It takes longer to build the homes. We ask more from the homeowners, but look at the default rate for Habitat. It's, you know, 1% of 1%. People get there, pride of ownership. They don't leave it, and we've built hundreds and hundreds of thousands of homes with that model. We never dialed it up beyond that. It's just one of those examples of staying true to your calling. Okay? So great questions all the way around. Jed, always a pleasure as we come up here on the top of the hour. I love our working together. Thank you for your insight related to questions to be asking. Absolutely spot on. And to each of you and all of you, I want to always encourage you to come into MediaBids.com, get to know Jed and his team, see the work that they're doing, let them help you bring additional revenue and really top shelf advertisers, which means you can go out and get more top shelf advertisers. Also, if you come into the MediaBid site, we have 10 years of educational programs. They're there for you. And then, of course, if you like the work we're doing here, if you like the one-way communication, this is sort of the version of what to do. When we meet on Tuesdays, it's how to do it, how to actually do the surveys, exactly the kinds of questions, to banter with your ideas related to the questions, to take it right into your media kit, to convert it into a speaking opportunity. So come into our site. It's powerhour.com. And on our Tuesday Academy, we work with you in actually how to deploy and incorporate all that we're doing. Jed, some closing words as we wrap up here today?
No, thanks everyone for joining us, and thank you very much to Ernest. Again, he brings an enormous amount of knowledge and experience to these, and hope everyone enjoyed it.
Beautiful. Jed, thank you so much. Always a pleasure working together. To all of you, make it a fabulous day. Take care.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.